She has a powerhouse voice and was introduced to the South African public with her first album, Zandisile, in 2004. Her voice is said to penetrate people's souls and hearts, and in the substance of her music is a consciousness about life struggles here in South Africa, the rest of the continent, and the wider world. Being a proud African, she always projects this in the way she dresses. Her music is internationally acclaimed, and she has used her position to promote the issues she feels most passionate about. I'm joined in studio by Simpiwe Dana. Thanks very much for joining us, Simpiwe. So it's great to have you in studio with us. You've been on the scene for a good 15 years now. Before you burst out with your distinct voice, at what point did you realize you had a voice? Is it something that your friends and family commented on, or was it just a passion that you always had from when you were a little girl?
It is a passion that I've always had since I was a little girl. And I didn't think that it was worth much. Really, I just really love to sing. I used to annoy my mom a lot when I was growing up because I have a very big voice and I would sing at the top of my voice and it really used to annoy her. But it was in matric when I got affirmation that this was something that I could do for a living. Mm-hmm. And it really freed me because I was in matric. I had no idea what I was going to do after high school because all I wanted to do was sing. But I didn't think that I had a voice that could go mainstream or anything like that.
Yes.
So we had this principal and vice principal in my school that were a married couple. The woman was a principal and the man was a vice principal. And they were well traveled. They'd been in exile and they came back and they got hired by the school. Mm. And the vice principal, we were singing at the farewell, at the matric farewell.
Yes.
I sang with a friend. And he came to me after and very nonchalantly said to me, you know, you can actually do this for a living. And for me, those words, I don't even know if he understands the impact of those words.
Wow.
On me, because it was the affirmation that I needed to
Yes.
then start to plan towards something like that. You know, like this village girl who comes from like very, very far, having big dreams of big city lights and being on big stages and all that. So that affirmation is the one that made me start on this journey.
Excellent. So your music is known for its consciousness, whether it's socio-political issues here in South Africa or elsewhere in the world. Is that a reflection of who you've always been from a young age, alert to your environment, the impacts of apartheid and so on?
Well, you know, when it comes to apartheid, I lived in a very sheltered environment. I just used to wonder when I saw all of these men coming back from the big city broken, what was going on out there? Because we lived in a very sheltered environment, the village. Yeah, the village life was very far removed from, you know, any like the politics and all that. You know, we still fetched wood from the forest to light our fires and water from the river or from the, you know, one of those tanks that were erected in the villages.
Yes.
We still listen to the wireless, you know, we still use candles. We basically lived in a whole different world than the rest of the country.
Mm.
And except for these men that would come back broken. And they would come back very different from us, like very angry. And we used to wonder what is going on. And some of them would be very heavy drinkers, and et cetera. But I would only be exposed to the rest of the country from high school.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to high school, first in Durban and then in Tata. And then I went to study in PE and then Joburg.
Yes.
That's when I would be like exposed to the rest of the world and see for myself why these people came back broken. I remember I was in PE and being made to feel so small. Like, you know, I was even scared to raise my hand in class because I just felt the environment was very hostile, but in a very passive way.
Okay, yes.
Like Cape Town. You know, you could feel like the hostility, but you couldn't point it and say, hey, you're doing this to me. It was not in your face aggressive.
Yes.
That's when I started to see, oh my God, there's something really bad going on out here.
Mm.
And perhaps that's why we live so poorly. Like, we're so poor growing up. You know, it affected us, but we're not aware why things were so bad in our spaces. Yeah, so I think based on growing up, having such humble beginnings and having a bit of trauma growing up, etc., I have grown to have a lot of empathy for my fellow humans and even animals. I'm one of those that I don't want to make people feel less.
Yes.
I'm always trying to empower them. I'm always trying to find ways to heal them.
That's right.
And I feel like that is basically my job.
So I understand that when you produce your third album, Culture Noir, it hit the big time on the European music charts. How did it make you feel that you were able to reach audiences that are very different to you and your experience and where you came from?
You know, I'll tell you first. Basically, my career, I've lived it out in disbelief, to be quite honest. I remember one of my very first gigs where after I had released my album, it was the Cape Jazz Festival. Right, I was a newbie, like a newcomer. Literally, my album had been released June before.
Okay.
So it was still building up. I thought it was still building up anyway. So yeah. I was one of those artists that were gotten for the event to just fill up the space. You know, I felt that way. I was a newcomer.
Yes.
Got paid very little money. And I had this show, this little tiny venue at the Cape Jazz. And there was so much commotion outside. I was wondering what the hell was going on. And people were literally breaking bones trying to get inside this venue to see me perform.
Wow.
And, you know, those kinds of things, I had to be given a bigger venue same night. I'm the only other artist who's had that, besides Miriam Makeba, who's had to be given two venues in the same night because of demand.
Wow.
From then on, I've just lived my career in disbelief. Even when I was touring Europe, being gone for 2 months at a time and getting standing ovations, my agent would be like, but do you see what's going on? I'm like, no, don't they do this for everyone? Like, she's like, no, they don't do this for everyone, you know? Sanjay, even today, I still, you know, I'm doing this work, this music work of mine, this art. I'm still in disbelief at the reception that my music gets.
Wow. Well, you clearly have impact and power. So in your view, how important are music and song in being able to change the world, do you think?
For instance, you know, how music carried us through the darkest days during even before apartheid, colonialism, from its advent in the country, how music was our pillow that we slept on at night, like the hope that made us wake up the next day. You know, how through music we evoked hope in people and we helped people also grieve and deal with their pain. I mean, you know, our music, Amagwijo, you know, like, you know, those apartheid songs that we created, even church music, you know, how we have placed our hope in music.
Yes.
How we've placed our healing in music. Mm. I think music truly is a true gift from God.
I noticed that even though you've been around for 15 years, you've not made it a mission to bang out many albums over the time. Is that an issue of quality over quantity for you? Or, you know, you've just been so hectic with your touring schedules and, you know, you just haven't had enough time to perhaps produce more albums, you know, that you prefer to do?
I would lean more on the quality side of it, because for me, it takes me quite long to produce, to write albums, to write songs. And I'm not one to just write a song now and then go and play with other kids and then come back to write another song 3 months later or 6 months later. When I go into studio, I go in for the long haul. So usually it will take me, because also music for me is a spiritual thing.
Okay, yeah.
There has to be something that evokes something in me that makes me want to write.
Yes.
It becomes a feeling that I can no longer ignore.
Yes.
And then I know, okay, it's studio time now. And if I don't go in there right now, I'm going to go mad. And then when I go in there for like maybe even 3 years. And I'm writing these songs every day, spending like 20-hour days in studio. It really takes its toll on my health as well. So for me, it cannot be rushed. Like even the process of writing itself cannot be rushed.
Yes.
And plus the process of getting to that point where that it's the right time to write, that also cannot be rushed.
Yes.
So it's not like I decide these things. I'm just a spiritual being walking my spiritual journey.
Yes.
And, you know, those things cannot be determined by a calendar or anything like that.
As you've evolved as an artist, as a human being, as a mother, how have you balanced the spiritual journey with the very important imperative of being able to make a decent financial living out of what you do. We do often hear that in the music and artistry world, people feel that at the beginning of their careers, they're very underpaid. And of course, as you become more established and become a Simpiwe Dana, perhaps you're in a better position to dictate terms. But just tell us about that financial journey and the things that you've had to go through.
Oh my God, my industry is one of the most uncertain industries you can. It's basically generally the same as just being a, what do you call it?
Not a slave.
No. No, what's the word? You know, where like you basically work for yourself and you depend on, it's not an entrepreneur, it's something else.
Self-employed.
It's self-employed, but there's a word for it like that
an entrepreneur.
No, it's not. It's not that either. I'll find the words soon enough. But you basically are dependent on someone giving you a gig.
Yes.
Unless like you create a gig for yourself, right? And that also requires capital to create a gig. You know, obviously like, you'll make money after, but you have to have seed funding to create gigs for yourself. So it's a very uncertain industry, and I understand why many artists are just like depressed and, you know, just not very emotionally well.
Yes.
It's a very uncertain industry. And I think that the one thing that has helped me, you know, sustain myself over time is the very reason that my music takes long to write. I put lots of quality into it, and that helps me with longevity. Yes, you know, people say that my songs are memorable, or they've helped them through certain situations. So, and even now, I have an annual show that I do every year for my people who are like big fans of my music because they feel personally about it, you know. So we congregate once a year, and I say,
is that the symphony experience?
No, not that one.
Okay.
That one is going to be a second one.
Okay.
That one is more formal for, you know, this one, the church one.
Okay.
It's just like fun.
Yes.
My friends even get on stage and they dance, and you know, like I give them the microphone and they sing. And usually at those shows, the guys sing louder than me on stage. I can hardly hear myself sing on stage because everyone's just singing along.
Yeah.
And they sing so loud and they're screaming. It's like, it's really, really beautiful to watch. And it's a very highly charged, highly spiritually charged event. Yeah.
Where do you do that event?
I've been doing it at the Lyric Theatre for the past 2 years. I think actually I'll continue doing it there. It's a good venue for it.
Yeah, it is a good venue. So with your stature, you've become an ambassador for Amnesty International and a convener of the African Union's Africa Reimagined Creative Hub. I'm particularly interested in the Creative Hub. Just tell us a bit about what that work is all about and the aim of the project.
Well, when Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma was still the chairperson of the AU, I approached her with a vision. And my vision was that music is the quickest way of uniting people. And as the African Union, like their first and utmost objective is to unite the continent.
That's right.
So that we can then do business with each other.
Yes.
Because it's only when our money circulates on the continent will we see growth in the continent. So I approached her and I said, why don't you use us musicians?
Yes.
This is the quickest way to actually unite the continent. And then other art disciplines as well. You know, your fashion people, your writers, by extension, they do the same work.
Mm.
Your photographers, your artists,
yes,
fine artists, you know. So I approached her with that. And I said to her, it's quite a pity that you've neglected, as the AU, this very important aspect of African culture.
That's
could
right.
be a conduit, you know, to the unification of the continent in tangible terms. And then she was sold on the idea, and then she said, okay, why don't you convene these people and basically create an arts and culture chapter, because we don't have that. So we found artists from all over the continent. I think we only left out one country because they were having, issues, political issues that were not in line with the unification of the continent. I think that was Morocco.
Okay.
So we did convene from across all art disciplines, about 120 artists, and we wrote the arts and culture chapter for the AU.
That's awesome.
And now the only challenge was now implementing it.
Yes.
And which is usually the case. Okay? We write all of these documents and then they just sit and gather dust somewhere. But the chapter is there with all the recommendations of how this can be done through the arts. And hopefully someone else will pick up the baton and continue the project. Or maybe they'll call me back. I don't know.
Okay, let's hope that continues, because you're right. It's important that we gel as Africans before we want to actually work together, because, you know, there has been a history of mistrust and so on and so forth. So here at home, you've demonstrated your passion for socioeconomic issues and the need to uplift those less fortunate and so on. What are your views about how all the significant players are dealing with the country's social issues, be it at a government level, business and ordinary men and women in this country?
I don't want to sound negative, right? But I think people are feeling overwhelmed. And when you feel overwhelmed, you don't know how to put that just one foot in front of the other. You know, people just see the whole big picture instead of just saying, okay, what can I do right now? And working step by step until, you know, all of the problems have been dealt with.
Yes.
So because people are feeling overwhelmed, they end up doing nothing. And I think that's our challenge.
Yeah.
We speak of these issues, but implementation, the problems are so big that people don't know where to start.
Where can we start?
Well, I mean, for instance, for me personally, when it comes to, I don't mean to prescribe, but this is one of my passions, gender-based violence. When it comes to that, we have to look at the root causes, not at the outcomes of, you know, of the root causes. And as far as I'm concerned, as long as we don't deal with culture, we don't deal with religion and how it objectifies women, we will not be able to curl this monster that we are dealing with. And it feels like people are too comfortable with their religions and their cultures to actually see how there are elements of those that are to the detriment
of women.
Yes.
That was Simpiwe Dana.